to the paper of Béatrice Laridon. And she is dealing with the Liyun chapter. You'll remember that Michael Pewitt also discussed this. And she is looking at it from quite a different angle, which is Kangyo Wei's thinking about the distant past.
Thank you, Michael. Today I will try to speak about Kangyo Wei's commentary of a very specific chapter in the Liti, the movement of ritual or the evolution of ritual. It's quite a dangerous sleeping for me because I usually read texts from the Han Dynasty. So I jump above almost 2,000 years, and now I try to give a reading of this text by Kangyo Wei. When reading the Liyun chapter, the evolution of which chapter, in the context of the collective work on the Book of Rites described by Anne and Stefan, I had the occasion to randomly refer to the last commentary of this chapter by Kangyo Wei, written at the very beginning of the 20th century and published in 1913 in his own journal, Puren, Compassion. I was struck by the refined mix of traditional exegesis and bold new interpretations. So I thank Anne and Stefan for giving me the opportunity to go a little bit further than my first impressions on this text. Kangyo Wei received the complete education of literati and extensively studied the Confucian classics, as well as Buddhist philosophy. During his years, he was active at the same time on a local level in Guangzhou and also on the central level, if I may say, since he repeatedly tried to have a direct influence on the emperor by sending memoir of remonstrance. Here you have the translation by Roger of one of these memoirs of remonstrance. He had the ideal opportunity of his lifetime when the young Guangxu emperor, interested by his ideas and his program, invited him to lead the reform of the imperial system. But a political coup followed shortly thereafter, the emperor Guangxu being imprisoned by his own aunt, Cixi, the empress dowager, and the leaders of the reform being either executed or exiled. After the failure of this 100 days reform, a tragedy in Chinese history and in Kang's personal life either, Kangyo Wei resumed his work on classical texts, which he most probably began earlier in his life. He shifts from a vision of Confucius as a reformer, as he had developed before in his Kongzi Gai Zhi Kao, Confucius as a reformer, to a vision of Confucius as a master of timely change, and seeks for a notion of evolution in the classical texts. He pays a particular attention to the idea of the three ages, the age of disorder, the age of rising peace, and the age of supreme peace. So in the years following the failed reform, he wrote quite a lot of important commentaries. So the commentary we will read today, the Li Yunzhu, the commentary on the Zhongyong, which is also a chapter of the Liti, the Book of Rites, a commentary entitled Subtle Meaning of the Mengzi, a commentary of Confucius Analects, and also a commentary of the Great Learning, another chapter in the Liti. As you can see, all these commentaries are clearly dated 1901 or 1902, except precisely for the commentary of the evolution or movement of ritual. That's unlucky for us, but at the same time, it's also interesting. As the other commentaries, the commentary of the evolution of rites chapter is preceded by a preface written by Kang Youwei himself. In this preface, he gives the date of year 1884, in the Confucian calendar, the year 2435 after Confucius. But in his autobiography, The Self-Composed Chronology of Kang Nanhai, which records Kang's life events until 1898, the writing of a commentary of the Liyun is not mentioned. The only precise dating we have is that of its first publication in 1913. If we examine the contents of this commentary as compared with the other commentary, the most probable dating is the same as the other commentaries, that is 1901 or 1902. During this time, Kang Youwei was in exile, first in Singapore and then in India. Thus, he may have written this commentary on the basis of more ancient materials that he took with him in his exile after the failure of the reform, but the final work was most probably done during these years of exile. Kang Youwei's introduction to his commentary of the Liyun chapter is a kind of intellectual autobiography where he presents the reading of Liyun chapter as a kind of enlightenment. He writes, "When my readings led me to the movement of ritual chapter, I felt overwhelmed and sighed. The transformation along the three ages and the real way once formulated by Confucius are all here in the chapter. The clear expression and the refined distinction of the way of great unity and modest prosperity, the causes behind the progress in ancient and modern times, the deepness of the divine sage, that is Confucius, compassion for the world, are all here. This book is the authentic transmission of Confucius' subtle words, a precious classic for the whole world and the divine method for having all the living beings rise again." So here he uses quite religious expression to describe the importance of this chapter, which here he calls a book, for him and also for the whole world. Thus, he may probably have antedate his commentary in order also to highlight its fundamental status in his intellectual life. The Liyun chapter before Kang Youwei was not so important in the intellectual history. So Kang Youwei had an important role in the very highlighting of this chapter. As is the case of most of the other chapters in the Liti, the movement of ritual chapter is of composite nature. Also, the chapter falls into the same category as the Great Learning, Ta Xue, and the Zhongyong, Doctrine of the Min chapters, the category of Tronglun, General Discourse on the Rituals. The history of its reception was far from comparable these two chapters. Under the Song Dynasty, the great learning and the doctrine of the main chapters in the Liti were extracted from this compilation and integrated in the canonical corpus, a new canonical corpus, that of the four books, whereas the Liyun chapter was strongly suspected to be heterodox, mainly because of its opening paragraphs, which smell the Taoist sulfur. These paragraphs, introducing the idea of an ideal state of human community called Great Unity, do not refer to the role of ritual. And as such, ritual may appear as secondary, if not associated with degradation of this ideal order of Great Unity. Due to this suspicion, this chapter fell into a relative neglect until the Qing dynasty, when it was mainly discussed as far as its authenticity and its philosophical affiliation were concerned. But what sparked Kang Youwei's deep interest for this chapter was precisely these controversial opening paragraphs. First of all, we may remark that the discourse on great unity and modest prosperity, which is the age of ritual, is carefully staged. The scene happens after an important annual sacrifice and develops through a dialogue between Confucius and one of his youngest disciples. If we follow Sima Qian's chronology, this disciple was perhaps only 10 years old. Poor boy. The Jia sacrifice, mentioned at the very beginning of the chapter, marks the end of the lunar year and is a way to express gratitude to the crowd of spirits and ancient sages who indirectly contributed to the harvest. It most probably presented an orgiastic component, as indicated in another chapter of the Li Ti, the Zatixia chapter. Here again, the Jia sacrifice gives the occasion to a dialogue between Confucius and a disciple, this time it is Zegong. This dialogue also reflects Confucius' concern with this particular sacrifice. It's here. In this other passage on the Jia sacrifice, Zegong took part to the Jia sacrifice, and then Confucius asked him, "Zegong, did you enjoy it?" Zegong answered, "I really don't know how to enjoy seeing the whole country turning crazy." Confucius said, "After hundreds of days of work, this one day of rejoicing, this is something you do not understand, indeed. Tension without release, kings Wen and Wu would not have been able to do that. Release without tension, kings Wen and Wu would not do that. The way of kings Wen and Wu is the alternation of release and tension." So as usual, Confucius is much more open-minded than his followers and is able to appreciate the great signification lying in the seemingly excessive, even orgiastic, ritual of Jia sacrifice. And here we turn again to our chapter. The very staging of the text is a fascinating mix of failure of and great hope. Confucius sighs with a kind of despair, thus provoking his disciple question. And in a paradoxical way, while we would have expected the usual Confucian lament on the world falling apart or of the bad state of ritual practice in his native kingdom of Lu, his answer to his disciple describes an ideal state of great concord. This sigh and the following answer to Zuyo's question gave rise to many debates. The first of all, as I mentioned earlier, was a questioning of the possible sneaking of Taoist ideas or even Maoist ideas in Confucius' mouth. It will not be the first time. In his, here I compare the two comments, two important comments on Confucius' side. Zhang Xuan says that Confucius saw that the Duke of Lu did not rightly perform the sacrifice right, and that's why he sighs. And Kang Youwei says Confucius attended the Jia sacrifice. During the sacrifice, dukes and nobles wear straw hat and peasant clothes. That is the cloth of supreme peace. The farmers are nourished and people are given rest. And this nourishment extends to animals and insects, plants and soils, in order to announce the meritorious end of the year. So during the supreme peace, there is no inequality. Confucius is striked by the longing for great unity. However, his own time is an age of disorder, and even if Lu had employed him, he was not able to put into practice his great way. That's why he sighs when encountering this ritual. So for Kang Youwei, the problem is not the Lu bad practices, but the very hope of Confucius to put into practice this great unity, which is represented during the Jia sacrifice, but only one day in one year. In his notice on Krang's commentary of the Liyun, Qing scholar Hu Yujin analyzed the passages of this commentary, and he quite interestingly drew a meaningful distinction between the hermeneutical aspect of Krang's commentary and its ideological dimensions. He says about Krang's commentary, in short, this book addresses another objective and should not be judged according to the criteria of pure exegesis. Zhang Xuan's commentary did not completely grasp the meaning of Liyun chapter, and in addition to this, Master Wang from Sheliang considered the two paragraphs on Tatrong and Xiaokrang as far from being Confucius' words, relating in fact to Lao Tzu's thought. All the later scholars were confused by that. Kang Youwei was the only one to be able to develop its profound meaning, supporting the idea that this chapter was the authentic transmission of Confucius' subtle message and the most precious classic for the world. His understanding was superior to all the literati since Han Dynasty. Here, I would like to try to not to put aside this exegetical dimension of Kang's commentary, as is suggested by Hu Yutin, but to further inquire into this hermeneutical work instead of focusing on the ideological message. I distinguish three themes, and for each theme, I try to make a link with a specific exegetical tool. So the first tool is the rearrangement of the classical text. Before Kang Youwei, Huang Shisan, in an essay entitled The Liyun Chapter is Not Related to Zhuangzi and Lizi, that is to Taoist thought, already refuted the idea that the notion of grand unity was a kind of golden age of spontaneity superior to the age of ritual. Here, Kang Youwei develops the same idea, and he puts the very focus on the Tatrong passage, that is the opening paragraph of the chapter. And in order to give more value to the Tatrong passage, he reorders the paragraphs of the Liyun chapter. And he comments, Tzuyo considered that Confucius' words about the great unity had an exceptional and new signification, and so desired to hear Confucius completely express this meaning. So Kang Youwei puts Tzuyo's question on the complete explanation of the ritual just after the Tatrong and Xiaokrang passage. And Kang Youwei also suppressed paragraphs, maybe because he found that these paragraphs were too technical, and he wanted to put the main point on the Tatrong and Xiaokrang modest prosperity distinction. And other philological tool which is used by Kang Youwei is philological notes. Most of the time, he follows Zhang Xuan philological notes, but sometimes he takes a great liberty with the philological notes and created a kind of new philological notes. For example, as concerns a passage on men and women, the Liyun text, the original text, said every man has his share and every woman has her heaven or a family for herself. And Kang Youwei comment, share signifies limit. Also, men are physically stronger. Their power should have limits, not to be exceeded. This is very different from the traditional commentaries. And moreover, he continues by a philological note about the term Gui, heaven. He does a gloss by glossing with the same character, but with the radical of the mountain, which means grant or majesty. And comment, also, women are physically weaker. They should stand up in majesty and not be humiliated. Both would establish a contract. They would respect altogether. This is a common reason for husband and wife. It was a very short-term contract to the eyes of Kang Youwei. And because I'm really too long, the last philological tool is references to other civilizations. This philological tool is quite new. Kang Youwei is the first to often doing reference in order to explain or to comment on the ancient ritual, so to refer to a ritual in ancient Greece or in India, and also to refer to the history of rituals in different countries. Here, I just would like to comment on one funny example. Here again, with animals. In the Liyun chapter, we have at the end of the chapter an evocation of this great harmony. Phoenixes and unicorns all gather in the grasslands around the cities, turtles and dragons in the lake of the imperial park. As for birds and beasts, humans only have to bend down to see their eggs or their babies all around. So there is a harmony between humans and animals when the ritual is completely accomplished. And Kang's comment, which is also the very conclusion of the whole comment of the on the chapter, introduces a comparison, if I may say, with the Park of Yellowstone in the United States. And remarks that in the Park of Yellowstone in America, the trained bears can be approached and the domestic lions can be played with. I don't know if the English is correct. all the living beings are together in harmony, hence they grow and multiply. This is a complete expression of the effect produced by accordance. And accordance is attained through the cultivation of rites, by which we can give substance to trust and grasp the convenient meaning. The highest level of ritual is timeliness, as you also say before, and then accordance. When accordance is attained in time of modest prosperity, then grand unity occurs in its own time. In fact, and as a conclusion, I'm very sorry, Kong's idea by writing these commentaries was probably that Confucian scholars would play a leading role in the reform, as it had been the case earlier in the history. In general, Kong seems to be at the same time highly conscious of the profound crisis experienced by his country and of the extreme urgency of the reform, but in a certain sense, is also confident about the possibility to find tools for modernization in China's intellectual and political tradition. This complex, or maybe ambiguous, answer of Kang Youwei to the modern question in China would not be possible a few years after. For example, in 1927, that is the year of Kang Youwei's death, we have an essay by Zhu Xianzhi on communism and grand unity, where he says, "Nowadays, Kang Youwei does not raise any question about the authenticity of the Liyun chapter, so the same problem as before, and even worse, makes this distinction between grand unity, which is a kind of hope, you have to wait the right time to realize, and lesser prosperity. On the one side, he considers the paragraph about the grand unity as the expression by Confucius of his ideal social system, and on the other side, he nevertheless meekly accepts to be cheated by forgers of the ancient times and uses the paragraph on lesser prosperity to accomplish his radical right theory of restoration." So it's a very violent accusation against Kang Youwei's purpose. And I will really conclude with Kang Youwei's own words. If it's not yet time, these words are also extracted from his commentary on the Liyun chapter. "If it is not yet time, and you nevertheless forcibly put grand unity and communism into practice, then it will provoke a great disaster. But the path, because the path is not yet opened, the customs are not yet refined, the human race has not yet improved." Thank you.